This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Welcome to a special presentation of Turn On the Jets Digital. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. We're going to talk about the entire process that went on, the madness, the sadness, involving everything surrounding the Adam Gase story, and also from here, what that means for the Jets, where they go from here, the whole shebang with one of my favorites. He is the editor-in-chief and now the owner over at JetsInsider.com, Mr. Chris Nimbley. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much. You know, everything's good over here, and I think you're right. As always with the Jets, it's all those things, the happiness, sadness, and madness, all rolled into one. Let's go.
It's always that way with the Jets. And with this story, I went over the news of it with Daryl Slater from NJ.com yesterday. But Chris, I wanted to ask you about a couple of things involving this. It seemed like everybody had different sources, as they say. And
yes.
They were all saying different things. I know Manish had the Matt Rhule thing for a while, and then Albert Breer was saying Gase or McCarthy, and then Lock and Four was saying they were looking to lock down Matt Rhule, and you had other people saying Monken was in the mix. Everybody was hearing different things. What is your take on where this stuff was coming from? Was it all agent speak? Were there leaks from the front office? Were there leaks from the coaches' camps? What was happening with all this?
There, a little bit of everything. Once again, it always comes back to that. There was definitely agent. I talked about it a lot on Twitter because I was taking a different approach than the other writers. I was tweeting out explanations of everything I heard, and I was telling you these are all contradicting things, but you can sit there and I could tell everything I was hearing about McCarthy was coming from an agent. It was all agent speak. It was very obvious. So it was easy for me to sit there and be like, okay, they're not really taking him seriously. It was a little harder to work through and work out all the other stuff, the Rhule stuff, the Monken stuff, the Gase stuff. And, you know, I was hearing all of them. I was hearing how they were all about Kingsbury, and now they didn't even offer Kingsbury the job. So you have to sit there, and I guarantee you all the other reporters were hearing the same varying reports that I was. They just decided to stick with the one that they trust the most to run out there, where I decided to tell everything I heard and explain that this all, who knows what any of it means.
Yeah, that was what was happening with me too. I had people from all over the place telling me A and B and C. And so within a 5-minute span, I'm getting somebody credible telling me that Matt Rhule is at Florham Park, and then somebody else telling me that Matt Rhule is at Waco back home. Your head started to spin. It was one of these realizations that half the time nobody really knows what they're talking about because, like you said, they're getting fed from Camp A, Camp B, Camp C. And when it all comes down to it, everybody's spinning it to their advantage in some way. It's a wild jungle out there, man. People don't realize the stuff that reporters have to sift through.
Yeah, and like the reports that I was trusting the most told me that Rhule was their number one option leading up to all this stuff, and then Gase would end up being the backup. Those are the reports I trust the most, but I didn't trust them enough to just run with just that. So I had to include everything else. And again, we talked about this, one of McCagnan's best traits or worst traits, depending on how you want to look at it, is the way he uses the media. He uses the media to defend himself, but he also uses the media to get out misinformation. And especially when they were targeting Rhule, they don't want everyone focused on Rhule because of, you know, all the issues with having to worry about recruiting with him. So there's pumping out misinformation right there, and that's a part of this whole thing. And that's why, and like, if everybody I talked to was telling me Rhule, then I can run with Rhule. But I'm getting two people going with Rhule, Gase back up, and then I'm getting three other people telling me completely opposite things, and it just mucks it up just enough for me to not have confidence to run with Rhule.
It is absolutely incredible what was going on. And as I was joking to you before we came on the phone, this is how you got Carl. This is how Carl happened. And by the way, I'm going to talk to Carl in a couple of days. I believe on Monday he's going to come on the podcast and we're going to get his side of the story. Did he actually have a source who ended up being wrong in the end, because remember, he does have connections to the Johnsons somehow, supposedly. Or was it all an elaborate hoax and he was able to fool all these people on Twitter because he told them what they wanted to hear? We're going to hear his side of the story, but this is how somebody like Carl, who had almost no followers, all of a sudden reports something and it just goes viral and takes off. And within a few hours, this guy goes from something like 50 followers to 1,000, because everybody's being deceptive. There's 1,000 different reports, and this one guy comes out with this declarative statement saying, I know for a fact Matt Rhule is going to be the head coach. I have a source that says it's getting done today, blah, 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 whereas everybody's hedging their bets in other corners. So people were like, wow, this guy must have a real source, and this is how this thing spread. And again, I want to hear Carl's story about it and see if it was a situation where he actually did know somebody and he got bad information or situation changed, or if this is all an elaborate troll job, which, by the way, if he did do this as an elaborate troll job, there are people that are mad at him. I think it's hilarious, personally.
Yeah, I agree. And we were talking about this. I think if Carl did this last week, it wouldn't have been a big deal. It was because of the way everything played out, because everybody was sick of waiting. Everyone just wanted something to be said. And I feel we all got the feeling that it was going to be happening soon. And then out of nowhere, Carl comes with this take. And it was just like everyone, no one knew what to do with it, but it was hilarious and random and out of nowhere. So we all just ran with the joke and mocking the situation there. And, like, the thing that I found hilarious about it to me is that I'm reading it and I'm like, yeah, this is a lot of what I'm hearing, too, and from the ones I trust the most. But you could see, I don't know, maybe if it's just the fact that he's a young kid still in high school, he doesn't know how to go about a reporter is never going to tell you a signing is going to happen by a certain time. A reporter's not going to do that. That's like, the deal could be agreed to, but the signing doesn't take place. There's a million things that could happen where you would never tie in a certain time. And then also, this is a little bit old school journalism, but he said, somebody asked him how good the source is. He said it's very reliable. He had one source. You're not supposed to run with the story off of just one source. That doesn't mean that what he had wasn't a legit source, but if he knew more about journalism and reporting, then he would have taken steps to frame his take or report a little bit differently.
And that's the thing that people are missing. You talked about this to me before we started recording. Carl is not a reporter. I mean, he put on his bio, Jets Insider, which is really funny to me. But yeah, he's not a reporter. He's just a dude on Twitter. And people are getting mad at him like he's Albert Breer or Jason Lockenfora or somebody like that. And by the way, this should have taught us Albert Breer is a guy to trust on Jets issues. I knew that anyway, because if you recall, Chris, I had him on the podcast to talk us through the whole Darnold episode, and he has sources inside that organization that helped him write that story, so he's plugged in. A lot of these other guys, though, are wrong all the time. Lockenfora wrong all the time. Some of these other NFL quote-unquote insiders seem to flip their opinions every 2 seconds based on which way the wind is blowing, and so they could say, oh, I was right in the end. But this kid didn't have any of that going on. He was just somebody that was on Twitter, whether he had a source or not. If he had a source, then he was just reporting what he heard from somebody. And if it wasn't a source, then he was just messing around. But either way, it's not like he's a professional reporter. People are acting like he violated some sanctity of Twitter reporting.
And listen, even if he was trolling and are completely making it up, like, there's no way that he could have expected that would have taken off like that. So, like, you know, he couldn't have expected it. He threw it out there. Maybe he was just trying to impress the 50 followers he had. Who knows? But he didn't expect it. He's a high school kid. He's not going to be held to the same standard. Like, it was all just hilarious. And, like, anybody that wants to look at it for anything other than a hilarious joke and just have fun with it.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
You're doing it wrong.
So let's relive that day a little bit before we get into where the Jets go from here. It started out where we were getting reports that Gase was very much still in the mix. That was coming from Albert Breer. We also had reports that the Jets might be closing in on Matt Rhule. I believe that was coming from Jason Lockenfora, and he was reporting that the Jets were pushing a Matt Rhule-Adam Gase combination. They were going to have a decision within the next 24 hours. Manish Mehta of the Daily News was reporting that the Jets' top choice was Matt Rhule. You had Mike McCarthy's camp leaking to Adam Schefter that he was either going to take the Jets' job or he was going to take the year off, and a report surfaced, though I can't remember who it was from, that McCarthy basically told the Jets, if you want me, here are my terms. I'll come and be the coach of the Jets if you meet my terms. Otherwise, I'm sitting out the year. So we had so many different reports from so many different corners, and everybody had sources everywhere. And in the end, this led to so much confusion. Take me through your day of what you heard from who. You don't have to give me, obviously, specific names, but what you were hearing throughout the day as far as, okay, this source told me this, now this source told me that. What was going on with you as an actual beat reporter?
Yeah, well, first, like, the name leading up to that day, the name that I was hearing the most and with the sources I trust the most was Matt Rhule. And that seemed to be their target as their number one choice, you know, going into everything before they had completed their interviews. And then, you know, again, I kept hearing McCarthy stuff, but I wasn't getting the sense that any of that was real. That all seemed manufactured from the agent. And again, like, if you look at my Twitter profile, the tweet I have pinned, the article I wrote, introductory about me taking over the site, and I talk about this all the time. If you just look at the way reports are framed, you can tell where they're coming from. You can tell who is served by this report being released, and you can tell where that the root of that is coming from. So it's easy to do when it's coming from agents. And like I said to you earlier, if an agent is telling you anything other than my client just signed somewhere, then that agent is using you. It's very simple for reporters, but reporters run with that anyway. They want to get the information and be used by that agent so that agent will turn around and tell them when the client has signed. I was hearing very little on Monken at first. You know, after the interview, I it was very quiet. It seemed to me that they weren't impressed with Monken at the time. I found out later that they were actually very impressed with Monken. They liked him a lot, but they decided to roll with Gase. But at the time, everything was quiet on Monken, so I was kind of starting to scratch him off. And the Gase thing, at first, I had said that I thought McCarthy and Gase were just doing the due diligence, saying that they talked to the guys with experience. But then as it got closer, days and days, it was like, no, Gase is a very serious contender here. And being able to sort through it all, trying to figure it all out, it led me to believe that, and this is why part of why I was having so much fun with the Carl thing, is I was like, I think he's right. He's working with the same information I am right now. I don't know that he actually knows or anything, but I think he's going to be proven right. And he was very close to being taken. As it seems, it was basically, it was very close to getting done, and then they went with Gase.
Chris, we've talked a lot about what Gase did in Miami. We're going to talk at length, I'm sure, at some point about what he did in Denver, what he did in Chicago. We're going to get into all of that. Joe Blewett is going to come on and break down his offense. So much to unpack with Adam Gase, but we're going to leave all of that for another time. Right now, I want to know what the way forward is going to be for the Jets. Whether you like the Gase hire, whether you don't like the Gase hire, it doesn't matter. It's done with now. So let's talk about the Jets moving forward. What do you think this means for the team as far as what they're going to try to do staff-wise, what they're going to try to do player-wise, what they're going to try to do in the draft, free agency, everything? What's the way forward here for the Jets after hiring Adam Gase?
Yeah, well, the first thing we're going to have to do is figure out and wait and see who the DC will be. You know, because how is that all going to fit? Are they going to bring in somebody with a 4-3? How would Leo fit in that? How would Darren Lee fit in that? I think Darren Lee would actually benefit a lot by being in a 4-3. So that could change some things. You know, what do they do there? You know, with Steve McClendon in there, what type of coverages are they going to run? We're going to have to wait and see on all that. On offense, though, one of the, Gase, we talked about this again, Gase is being talked up as this brilliant offensive mind, the super innovator, and I think that's getting a little carried away here. but he is a good offensive mind. He does do some scheming things. I loved what he did this year by getting Albert Wilson, by getting Jakeem Grant, by working with some of Tannehill's limitations. He was getting credit earlier in the year when Tannehill had a good stretch. One of those games in there was against the Jets, where Tannehill was putting up good numbers, but it was a lot of basically extended handoff-type passing plays, you know, just a little toss pass and watch Albert Wilson run for 78 yards. But he recognized how to work with the talent that Tannehill had. He added those speed guys. He got them, schemed them open so it was a short pass and an open field in front of them, and they could use their speed to take off. And you got it. Now you're going to have questions how these Gase and Robbie Anderson's personalities are going to clash. But I think if you look at what he did with Albert Wilson when Albert Wilson is healthy, that gives you reason to be excited. See what he can do with Robbie Anderson, who is a better, more complete receiver than Albert Wilson, but also extremely fast. So some of that, one concern I do have, though, there's been reports that last year he wanted to put all the money on defense and he didn't want to spend any money on guards or anything. And yeah, that's a problem. The offensive line is the number one thing that determines all the good teams in this league. They have great offensive lines. That's the most common denominator between a good team and a bad team. So there's a lot of things, and of course, the personality, running people out of there, his my way or the highway attitude, how's that going to mesh with some of the players? Jamal Adams isn't going to come out here and bash Adam Gase, but if they're losing, he's going to voice his frustration, and Adam Gase isn't going to like that. So there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of things that have to mesh well, and a lot of cause for concern. But, you know, there's also some optimism you can hang on, and that's just, but I think most of that is just hoping Darnold is better than the quarterbacks that Gase had to work with in Miami.
Have any of the players, besides obviously Sam Darnold, come out and said anything publicly about the Gase hire?
I saw Avery Williamson tweeted earlier today. I forget what it was, but it was some generic. It was just like, welcome Gase, let's get it, or something like that. It wasn't something about loving the hire or anything. I've only seen the Sam comments, and I know a lot of other reporters are running with it, and that means nothing. Sam Darnold isn't going to do, and forget about the fact that they share that same agent, because that's enough to get that, but who cares? Sam Darnold isn't going to do anything but say positive things. The only way Sam Darnold is going to be against this is if Gase was like, yeah, I'm not playing you. Then that's the only way that Sam Darnold was going to object to anybody. That he's not that type of person. He's going to go with it. And everything he said about Gase, he also said about Jeremy Bates. So it doesn't matter. It's really irrelevant. I get why people are running with the story, but it's just kind of silly.
What's going on with Vance Joseph? Is that the guy that it looks like Gase is going to bring in as the DC? We've heard Greg Williams' name floated a little bit. What are you hearing there?
It feels like they're waiting on Joseph, because that's what it feels like to me. I know some of it, the concern is, and you know, people are wondering why the Jets haven't announced it yet. I know some of it is, I tweeted earlier that, you know, some of the coaches, defensive coordinators like Vance Joseph are still interviewing for jobs. And then Connor Rogers tweeted me, and also, you know, like the offensive guys that Gase is going to bring in are still under contract. So they need to get that worked out and get released from their contracts and all that. But right now, it the fact that it's taken so long to get a defensive coordinator makes me think that they want Vance Joseph as their first choice. I think that would be a mistake. I would think Greg Williams and Chuck Pagano would both be better choices, but neither of them have any holdups or any reasons why you would wait to hire them. Vance Joseph does, and obviously Gase has worked with him before, so that makes me think that that's going to be the choice.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Let's talk about the reporting structure, Chris. It's going to be Gase reporting to Chris Johnson and Mike Maccagnan reporting to Chris Johnson. How is this going to work? Because we know that Gase has had issues with management of all stripes. Do you think there's any potential for real disaster? Because a lot of people don't like this reporting structure as it is. With Gase, it seems like it could be a little thorny. What do you think this means for Maccagnan as well?
There is absolutely potential for disaster. Like, absolutely. This is to get somebody with Gase's personality, it makes this the most volatile it could possibly be. You know, if he had to report directly to Maccagnan and that type of structure, at least he'd be taking it up with Maccagnan straight to face-to-face. Now you're setting it up where, and I'm not just now because this is how it has been, but you're setting it up where they're basically, the GM and the coach are basically arguing against each other. They're basically talking behind each other's back. You're welcoming that. You're inviting that. Like, so it's going to be volatile if it doesn't work out. And if Gase feels like Maccagnan isn't getting him the players that he needs, which we know is, can very well be a problem because he didn't get Bowles the players that he needs. Gase is going to let Christopher Johnson know. He's going to let the media know. He's going to let the players know. And then all of a sudden, Maccagnan's going to do his passive-aggressive stuff where he's leaking stuff to the press to make Gase look bad and this and that. But the one good thing I will say about this is, you know, silver lining type thing, is if this fails, I expect it to fail disastrously in the first 2 to 3 years. And then you can get them up out of here fairly quickly, at least.
Chris, what's the deal with the presser? I know that reports are the deal's official, but I haven't heard anything yet about when they are going to have the official press conference.
Yeah, I think they're waiting for the staff, at least the defensive coordinator and then the offensive coordinator. I think they just want to have the entire staff to announce it. They want to be able to get it all over in one shot and not have to, you know, bring us back in or have to worry about that stuff after. I really think it's just that simple.
I'm very curious about where the Jets go from here, and we're going to start to see it over the next few weeks as the staff gets hired, as we have the Senior Bowl, as we have the Combine, the draft process, free agency. We're going to see how this marriage works. We're going to see how this reporting structure works. Some people have said this has circus potential. It could work, though, right? There's a possibility it could work.
Yeah, it could absolutely work. Listen, one of my main concerns, again, I was telling you, is of all the defenses I'm hearing of Gase is the same defense I heard of Bowles at the end of last season. It's all the same thing. He didn't have enough talent to work with. He didn't have a quarterback. You know, it's all the same stuff, which is true. It's all true, but that doesn't also mean that he's a good coach. They can both be bad. So we're going to see, it's not that I don't think he's a good offensive coach or an offensive mind or a good play caller. It's his personality, his brace of personalities, that my way or the highway, a philosophy that causes me the most concern. I think players are going to buy in right away because that's what happens. They will give the new coach a chance. They'll buy in, and because they're going to play a last place schedule, I can see them having a solid season, even overachieving with 8-9 wins, and then people being fully on board. But then if you get the next year, you get 2 or 3 losses in a row, and then all of a sudden players are like, yeah, you're trying to be Belichick, you're not Belichick. It's hard to implement that type of philosophy and style when you don't have the rings behind it. People come into the Patriots facilities knowing that's what Belichick's like and knowing about his past success. They're not going to be willing to stick through all that when things get rough, when you have rough patches and stuff. So it's very, very, volatile situation that could definitely blow up. But again, he does have better weapons to work with here. He has Darnold better. They're going to have the money to spend. It's mostly whether he's going to fail or succeed, especially in year one, is going to come down to what Mike Maccagnan does with this $100 million and his draft choices. It's really that simple. Talent will win out. He's a good enough coach to win games with a talented roster. I don't think he's a good enough coach to severely, dramatically overachieve with a roster that he shouldn't do as well with.
Yeah, I think Chris Moore really nailed it on the Turn on the Jets podcast with Joe Caparoso when he said everybody's got their attention on the coaching search for obvious reasons, but if the Jets are going to succeed, no matter who the coach is, they've got to get an infusion of talent. And so the most important guy right now is Mike Maccagnan. All eyes should be shifting to him because now he's got this money to spend, he's got the draft picks to use, and he's got to use them wisely because ultimately, like you said, whether it's Gase or anybody else, a coach needs talent to succeed, and if a coach has talent, he will do fine. Even if he's not the greatest coach in the world, you have to be Bill Belichick if you have a great team. We've seen it over and over again. Look at Barry Switzer with the Dallas Cowboys as an example. You have enough talent, you can overcome it. So regardless of whether or not Adam Gase is a good coach, a bad coach, somewhere in between, the eyes now shift to Mike Maccagnan to see what he's going to do in the offseason. And Chris, that'll be the next major topic that we have. Free agency, it's coming up. It's around the corner. I know people think, oh my God, it's so far away. It's March. March isn't that far away now. You're looking at 6 weeks or something like that. So it's going to be an interesting bunch of weeks as we speculate what the Jets are going to do. We assume they'll make a run at the big free agents because they have all this cash, but it will be something that, just like this coaching search, takes over our lives for a while, Chris. And I'm looking forward to talking to you about it over the next few weeks. And we'll dive more into Adam Gase as well and different things and different aspects, including the film with Joe Blewett. So it's not just going to be Adam Gase Central, although we are going to have a lot of that over the next week or two. But we are going to start bringing you a lot of free agency info and speculation and so on, just to have some fun with it like we did last year with the roundtables. And you'll have all the normal OJ Digital programming, including Michael Nania, who's going to be debuting a numbers nerd podcast coming up. It's going to be called The Chronicles of Nania because it's funny, so why not run with that title? And we'll have that for you starting next week. Chris, I know you're a big fan of that.
Yes.
Chris, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me through the process of the day that will always live in infamy for Jets fans, December 9th, 2019, and then, of course, where the Jets go from here beyond December 9th, 2019. The day of Carl is over. The era of Adam Gase is upon us. Let's hope that it works out for the best for the Jets. We're going to see exactly how it plays out over the next few months and if that's an indication of good or bad to come. Chris Nimbley, the editor-in-chief and owner over at JetsInsider.com. Thanks so much for coming on. For anybody that is unfamiliar with you, and if you are, come on, man. Start following this man on Twitter. Go to JetsInsider.com. Where can they find you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at cnimbley, N-I-M-B-L-E-Y, or I'm Jets Insider. And yeah, we're going to start moving on from the coaching search. If you want to tweet me about college players to start scouting early, somebody you want stuff on, I'm going to start digging into the college tape soon. Obviously going to start looking at the free agency. So if there's any players anyone wants me to take a look at or think about, let me know. But, it's going to be a fun offseason right now. We've got the coaching search behind us. We've got $100 million to spend and a very high draft pick. So there's going to be a lot of takes, a lot of speculation and debate going on, and we're going to try to bring you as much of it as possible.
Absolutely. Looking forward to talking to you more throughout the offseason, Chris. In the meantime, check out JetsInsider.com. And for all the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and TurnOnTheJets.com.